Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, the 27th of February, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I open the show with an update on some motor vehicle safety issues being revisited by the General Assembly, including the interesting fact that Connecticut's one of only a handful of states that still allow open containers of alcohol in motor vehicles. New Canaan, Darien, Stamford, GOP State Rep. Tom O'Day dropped by. He talked about a few of those motor vehicle laws that might need updating. Only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi had the latest on the Bridgeport absentee ballot investigation, while CBS News correspondent Linda Kenyon joined us from the White House with the latest on some high-level Trump meetings.
So it certainly appears that there's a full-court press on to lower the blood alcohol level for intoxication for DUI here in Connecticut from 0.08, where it is now, to 0.05. So I guess there is a push to cause criminality here. And we heard that piece of sound from, I guess it was a federal official yesterday saying, hey, if we go to 0.05, it could, I forget the word he actually used, it could probably or it could likely save lives. And it's going to create criminals, and it's going to ruin lives. Now, might it save a life? Maybe. We don't know that. And frankly, I can't believe, well, I can, because like I said, this whole thing is to put up a smoke screen so we don't have to care about the deleterious effects of mixing booze and marijuana. Notice how there's nothing here taken up by the majority that goes after, hey, the fact that there are probably, in fact, state police have said it, there are some people driving under the influence of marijuana, but for some reason we just don't want to go after that. I don't know. I don't get it. I just don't get this. I really don't. Now, thankfully, there's at least one member of the General Assembly who's going to join us later on today to talk about what we really should be talking about, is clamping down further on the laws that we have and changing this ridiculous law that we have before we go to 0.05 and start putting people in jail or having them incur costs, legal costs and otherwise, maybe affecting them at their work by lowering it to 0.05 from 0.08. We'll speak later with Fairfield County Republican State Rep. Tom O'Day. Now, he is urging lawmakers to crack down on smoking and drinking on Connecticut highways. He has introduced a comprehensive road safety bill. Now, you ready for this? You ready for this? Now, this is from a majority in Hartford that's always whining and cranking about, well, we don't have enough money for this, enough money for that. Do you realize that the state of Connecticut, as progressive as everybody says we are, oh, we look out for kids, we look out for the children, we look out for people. Do you know, and I had forgotten about the money involved here, do you know? And if you don't, I'll tell you right now. Do you know that because we still allow open alcohol containers in the passenger compartments of motor vehicles, the Fed, that's cost us $189 million since 2001. Did you know that? Now, I'm sorry, this may rub you folks the wrong way. I'm sorry. If the motor vehicle is running and moving, there should be zero allowance for open alcohol in a motor vehicle. Instead of trying to make people into criminals, which they're not because they're not hitting 0.08 and they may be at 0.06 and 0.07 because they've had that extra half beer, maybe instead of doing that, we should start out with the basic stuff that we're not doing here for whatever reason. We don't want to upset certain ethnic groups. I remember the first time this was bandied about a few years ago. Well, you know, in the inner city, this was actually a reason. I couldn't believe when I heard this. Well, people like to sit in their cars and drink. And that was given as a reason that we're losing millions of dollars of federal money because we still, along with 11 or 12 other states, we allow open alcohol containers in the car. And that means, yeah, we allow passengers to drink. Why do we do this? What do you think of this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. This is asinine. And no, we're not talking about putting a crimp in the business of limousine drivers and livery vans, wedding parties, people going to and from Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park and Citi Field, you know, who can have beer in it. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the fact that Uber Progressive Connecticut, for some reason, oh, we care about our children. We care about safety on the roads. But we're still introducing a bill now. We're still introducing a bill now to ban open alcoholic beverage containers in the passenger compartment of motor vehicles. Now, we're not up to federal standards on that. Failure to comply. Listen to this. Failure to comply has cost the state nearly $189 million in federal funding since 2001. And that's not coming from some conservative think tank. That's not, well, you're just taking that from the Yankee Institute. No, we're not. That comes from the current Department of Transportation Commissioner Garrett Yucalito. So I have a small wish to the people of our fine General Assembly. Grow a set. Of course, that's rhetorical for women. We get it. We understand it. I understand the genders here on the show. Really? Really? We've lost almost $190 million in federal highway money over the past 25 years, because for some reason we allow alcoholic beverage containers to be open in the passenger compartments of motor vehicles. That's asinine. Sorry. So according to Garrett Yucalito, the State Department of Transportation Commissioner, we have lost $189 million because Uber Progressive Connecticut is too dumb to outlaw open containers in a passenger vehicle. Now, obviously, you can't have them up front. We don't want the drivers, we don't want them, obviously, drinking here. But apparently, Connecticut is one of 12 states, so out of the entire states, state of the U.S., and the nation's capital. We're only one of 12 states without an open container law, which has cost us $189 million in federal funding over the past 24 years. Does that make sense to you? Look, I'm no savant at this stuff, but how is that allowed? And I remember reading, well, there is some cultural things. People, honest to God, I remember reading this a few years ago. Well, there are sensitivities to some cultural and some societal things where people like to sit in their cars and drink. Really? Really. Ron in Trumbull starts us off today. Ron, good afternoon. How are you?
Good morning. I apologize for my voice here.
That's all right. Don't apologize. Don't ever apologize.
It's a sign of weakness. Yeah, I know. This genius that says that we're going to reduce alcohol-related accidents by 11%, where's they getting the data? Isn't it only one other state that has?
Yeah, it's only Utah. You're talking about the going from 0.08 to 0.05. Yeah, there's only one other state that does it. And by the way, it's a state full of Mormons, not exactly, Ron, people that party hard, if you know what I mean.
Now, see, this is crazy. We get these numbers thrown out at us. People take it for gospel when we really don't know where they're coming from. Anybody can make this thing up.
Mm-hmm. No, and Ron, why? We had an expert, we had an expert, a soundbite on this radio station who said, hey, you go from 0.08, Ron, to 0.05 for, let's say, a smaller framed woman, 130, 140 pounds, normally be a woman, that's a half a drink. That's a half a beer.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not going to make a bit of difference.
No,
it'd be putting people in jail.
Well, thank you, Ron, and that's my point. Thank you. Now, listen, if we're going to go 0.08 to 0.05, all right, let's see. Let you show me numbers from 7 or 8 states that have done it and show me that span over 3 or 4 years. Show me that. That's fine. Then I'll say, well, you know what? That's good empirical data. We can do that. Oh, wow, look at this. 7 or 8 states went from 0.08 to 0.05, right? Wow, we should do that. One state? And the contrast in this story here, which I should mention, is written by Mia Palazzo here in yesterday's Connecticut News Junkie. Meantime, they're talking about, going from 0.08 to 0.05, when the real problem here is we still have an open container law in the state, and Tom will be on with us later, we still handcuff our police officers, state police and local police, by really hammering people who, you know, may be misusing marijuana. But again, like I said, this is all part of the plan to keep you from blaming marijuana for anything, or edibles, or anything to do with THC. Really? You think the state could have used that $189 million over the past 20, 25 years, you think? Huh? Evan in Shelton's here. Evan, how are you, buddy? Good afternoon.
All right. Listen, I when I heard the subject, I couldn't help but phone in.
Yeah.
So we already had this conversation a few months ago.
Yeah.
The reason that they're not allowing, they're not passing the laws to stop that is because of your inner city legislators. You're right. They I forget what year it was, but they actually were opposed.
Yeah.
Because they said that people in the inner cities, that's all I'm going to go with that, drink in their cars.
That was 2 or 3 years ago. That was 2 or 3 years ago, Evan. Yeah, yeah.
At least. And they would get the people that do this would get harassed by the police.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That was their reasoning.
Yeah.
So that's why we lost that $189 million because, you know. one more thing.
Yeah.
The marijuana thing.
Yeah.
So I drive a motorcycle.
Sure.
Now, so I'm in back. If smoke or something is coming out of a car in front of me, or even you could smell it.
Yeah.
So I would say that before these geniuses passed allowing marijuana, you know, legal.
Yeah.
I would smell it maybe if I'm driving, maybe once or twice a year if I can remember.
Yeah.
It was so, you know, now it's at least once a week.
Really?
Yes. And I don't have to be on my motorcycle to smell it either. Because if your windows are down, I'm serious.
So if you're on your bike, you're getting a nice little contact high if you're in back of the right car, is what you're telling me.
Well, I'm less nervous when I drive. Yeah, absolutely. No, but anyway, I wanted to tell you that to remind you that it was the legislators,
yeah,
and that's why we lost so much money. And more people are driving and smoking at the same time. So thank you, Democrats.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate it. Yeah, and this is why, you know, this is what Tom O'Day has said. He is urging lawmakers to simply crack down on smoking and drinking on the highways. And he is calling for stricter enforcement of impaired driving laws that are already on the books. But this lunacy of going from 0.08 to 0.05 without any solid background, and I'm sorry, look, I'm no doctor, I'm no statistician. I was married for 12 years to a statistician. I dated another statistician for 6 months. I know, it's women in numbers. Let's talk about your standard deviation. Yeah, no, but seriously. Any statistician worth his or her salt or pepper or ground garlic or anything will tell you, you can't make a decision off of one state. And again, we say with all the kindness in our heart, a state dominated by a lot of people who don't really party hardy. I mean, I've worked with a couple of Mormons. You would be amazed. What? I mean, a lot of Mormons don't even, never mind booze and marijuana. A lot of Mormons, and I was surprised to find this out, they don't use caffeine. They have to only eat certain kinds of candy. They won't drink caffeinated soda, caffeinated coffee. And again, I'm not trying to draw any sort of conclusions on the dietary aspects of the Mormon faith, but come on. But maybe you think I'm wrong here. Maybe you're in favor of this. So you tell me. The number's 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. The state of Connecticut is apparently in the General Assembly for the second or third time in the last few years is saying, hey, why don't we lower the blood alcohol level or the standard? Everybody knows 0.08 or 0.08. You see a story. Wow, look how high. Look how much somebody was over 0.08. But here's the thing. If you lower that to 0.05, you will be creating criminals. You will. It's not me saying it. Physiologists are saying it. You will be creating criminality if you pull somebody over and they might not have harmed a fly behind the wheel for years at a 0.07 or a 0.06. And now suddenly you're going to lower this to 0.05? Really? And have them incur incredible family pressure, legal costs, maybe a suspension from work? Makes no sense. And joining us right now, State Rep Tom O'Day, Republican, District 125, good chunk of Fairfield County, New Canaan, Darien, and Stamford. Hey, Tom, it's Paul again. Welcome back. How you been?
Good, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm good. And, Tom, I got to tell you, I guess you were involved in a rather interesting hearing yesterday on all things transportation, including, Tom, issues like lowering the blood alcohol level, the use or in the policing of marijuana. So for my listeners, Tom, and we've been going a good 2 hours with calls on this now, what were the takeaways from that yesterday, Tom? And how do you feel about some of these, some of these ideas that are being floated around at the Capitol on this?
So, no, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners. Look, going from 0.08 to 0.05, I think misses the mark. Yes, will it? Potentially save lives? Maybe. I'm not sure, but and the reason I say that is there has been, since the law passed in Utah, which is the only other state that has went from 0.08 to 0.05, they've actually seen a 20% increase in fatalities involving being under the influence of alcohol. Mm. So it has not lowered the number of deaths in Utah as a policy. So that's one. Two, we've got laws in the books right now, as I heard you talking, that allows somebody to be actively smoking marijuana as a driver of a vehicle, and the police drive by, and the police cannot utilize smoking marijuana as probable cause for a stop, but they can utilize if I'm drinking. So the example I gave the commissioner, and he understood and he agreed I'm reading the law right. Look, I'm a lawyer by trade.
Okay,
I don't do criminal law, but the plain language of the bill when we pass recreational marijuana says the police can't utilize smoking marijuana observed as probable cause to pull somebody over, but they can use if somebody's drinking a beer while driving, they can be pulled over. Now, tell me, how does that make sense?
No, it doesn't, Tom. You know, Tom, God bless my listeners. Sometimes I get calls on this. They say, well, that can't be right. I say, well, yes, it is. And, Tom, you and I both know, because we've talked about that, the holes that were in that marijuana legislation, the gaping one, the one you just talked about, when it was passed, mind-boggling, Tom. It's mind-boggling. It really is.
Yeah. And so my point is, and the expert from the NTSB admitted that when you mix both alcohol and marijuana, it is even worse, which is just common sense. But the vast majority of accidents that involve fatalities have alcohol, blood alcohol, well over 0.10, and a lot of them now have marijuana and other drugs in the system. So we clearly have a problem out there now that people are under the impression that they can smoke or be under the influence of THC, gummies or candies or whatever they're doing,
sure,
and be able to drive. And people literally think that's okay. It's not. And I also heard you say that the open container law costs us millions from the federal government. That's not true, okay? I want to put your listeners at ease.
Okay.
They're hearing misinformation. It's roughly 2.5% of the federal money that they give us for construction has to be utilized in education and safety. Education and safety. So guess what? We don't lose the money. Our education and safety budget has to be increased. The commissioner admitted that.
Oh, interesting.
And so, yes, we're not losing out on the money. The money has to be allocated towards safety, whether that's DOT sponsoring roadside stops or ad campaigns, which everybody admits we need to do a better job of advertising and letting people know, public service, that you cannot be under the influence of THC and drive. It's just lunacy. So we're not losing the money. Your listeners have to understand it's roughly $10 million a year that, instead of going towards bridge construction or other construction, has to go towards safety and education. And by the way, we're not spending enough on safety and education, so we're not losing that money.
So now, Tom, explain the context here, because, you know, I'm reading the testimony here from Commissioner Yucalito, and he's using the $189 million figure over 20-something years, and he's connecting it, it says here, to, and I know this has been bandied about in the past, Tom, the open alcoholic beverage containers for rear seat passengers. How is there a connection here?
Yes, so that is basically the federal government said, if you allow people to have an open container in the vehicle, that there about 2% of the federal money that goes towards roads and construction has to be allocated towards safety and education.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Now, so that $188 million over 20-some-odd years, it's roughly $10 million a year,
give or take. Got it.
And that already and the DOT will tell you they spend more than $10 million a year on safety and education of our roadways. So we're not losing that money. Now, ideally, would we be able to get the money unencumbered, but demanding that it go to safety and education? Yes, but the issue is there's not a, as I said to the commissioner, and everybody agrees, there's not a single person on planet Earth that ever got drunk or intoxicated because a passenger was drinking a beer. That's never happened. But a passenger smoking marijuana, I learned a new term yesterday. People laughed at me. I didn't realize it's called a hot box. When people, I guess, are smoking marijuana, smoke in the room together, it becomes a hot box. People get high, I guess, from the secondary smoke.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so that's common sense, right, Paul? But a police officer, right now, the way the law is, if a police officer sees a car that's enveloped in smoke, that they can barely see the other side of the vehicle, he's not allowed to pull that car over for suspected driving under the influence, unless the person's weaving or swaying. But if the driver's drinking a beer, the officer can pull them over.
And if any, Tom, let me ask you this, Tom O'Day, the state rep, Fairfield County, joining us right now. So, Tom, if the Republican caucus was, and this is kind of a batting practice fastball, if you know where I'm going here, if the Republican caucus was pushed at all to amend that law, what do you think would happen? Would anything happen?
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what happened, because we filed amendments to make this the law, that if somebody is drinking a beer or smoking marijuana cigarettes while driving, the police can pull them over automatically on right away for probable cause of driving under the influence. Okay?
Yeah.
No longer, and frankly, I would make it the law, if anyone in the car is drinking a beer or smoking marijuana, the police can pull that car over and test the driver for driving under the influence. I think that alone would save lives. I also would put The commissioner Iacolito said yesterday, we can put in up to 15 speed cameras up around the state. And right now we don't have, I think we have one or two, and we're hopeful to get 15 in place by the end of next year.
You're talking about on the state. You're talking about on the state highway system, right? That's what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Got it. Yep.
And Paul, I confessed yesterday. I initially was opposed to the speed cameras because of identifying who's in the car,
sure,
getting wrong information. But you know what? I was wrong, and here's why I was wrong. We're now faced with record fatalities in our state, and people are going 10 to 15 miles an hour on average faster than they were pre-COVID, and we have a massive drop in police stops. So our roadways have never been more dangerous.
Yeah.
So I am now, and generally the public, when they know that speed cameras are in place, they slow down.
Oh, yeah.
So here's another example. You know how buses have cameras now on the side? School buses have buses or cameras on the side?
Yeah.
You know, the amount of people passing buses illegally has come to an almost stop.
Yeah.
If we had speed cameras on every DOT construction truck, okay, and everybody knew it, I guarantee you we would have less speeding around construction zones.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tom, thanks. And I do have to scoot, Tom, but we'll see how this all evens out. And keep us updated on this, all right? Will you do that for us?
I appreciate it, Paul. I appreciate your listeners, and God bless.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Republican State Rep. Tom O'Day, District 125, New Canaan, Darien, and Stanford.
Ah, here we go, Maud. Here we go, Mom. Here we go, Dad. Yeah, it's about that time of the week. First break, 5 o'clock hour. Only in Bridgeport.com. Man, is that ever prevalent now as it's ever been? Lenny Grimaldi joins us. Lenny, good afternoon. How are you?
Uncle Paulie, I now officially know why you speed on the highway. You're rushing to see your gourmand.
You like that, huh? Lenny, I'm telling you, this is a big reason nobody wants this, because they're going to get, you know, when the divorce trial comes, Lenny, and our gourmand is sitting there in row three of the courtroom.
There you go. There you go. There goes the bank account.
Sir, may I introduce into evidence this photo taken by Connecticut State Police radar?
Oh, my God, Lenny. Hey, I read with some intent the arrest warrants, Lenny, chronicling, as you say in your piece here, the wide-ranging election fraud. And there's a name there, Lenny, and I want you to go over the whole thing, but Margaret Joyce, and she is alleging some rather interesting things. So for my audience here, Lenny, who didn't really feel the need to go into all the affidavits, break it down for us here. Where does this stand right now?
So we were talking about this, you know, during the mayoral race of 2023. A lot of complaints were filed. You know, state investigators started picking stuff apart over absentee ballots. And now we have some serious charges leveled against five political operatives. Three of them are members of the city council, one the vice chair of the Democratic Party. And it really is, a lot of it focuses on absentee ballots. I'll read some of the things. You know, I have the affidavits posted on my site. But
yeah,
these charges range from forging signatures, possessing absentee ballots, which is a no-no unless you're, you know, a family member, a police officer, or a nurse, right? Changing votes after the votes have been cast.
Wait, that's not right? We're not supposed to do that? Oh, my God.
Pressuring electors how to vote, registering non-citizens, and harvesting absentee ballots, and
yeah,
we have the images of them being stuffed into the ballot boxes from September 2023. I interviewed one of the council members being charged.
Yeah.
Alfredo Castillo, he's quite an interesting defense, but he's one of those charged with registering a non-citizen. And he said to me, how am I supposed to know she's a non-citizen? She gave me her
By the way, the screams that we heard after that, is that Mr. Castillo's lawyer after he talked to you? Or?
Yeah. He's got a very good lawyer, Frank Riccio, but yeah, that's The prehistoric noise you just heard was from Frank Riccio. Yeah.
What are you doing? But so a lot of this is as we've talked about, a lot of allegations here. Everyone's innocent till proven guilty. But I was surprised that this Margaret Joyce, who was laying out some pretty serious charges here.
Yeah, well, she's a Stratford resident. I don't know her. The others I know, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know her, but she's helping out. So you have three people charged who were supporting Mayor Joe Gann. The other two were supporting his primary opponent, John Gomes. So this is just not one-sided, as we talked about. This is spread out over different camps.
Yeah.
But she was helping a city council member. She was apparently supporting the Gannon campaign. And in the affidavit, it's she actually gave an interview to the state.
Yeah.
Believe. State law enforcement officials about her role in this thing. The people she interviewed, the possession of ballots, that was one kind of the outlier thing. That there were a couple of things I didn't expect here, but that would be one. Three city council members, the vice chair of the party, so wanted Judith Pataki became the face of all this, right? Mm-hmm. Because she was the one captured on the video surveillance, stuffing the ballots into the drop boxes, as several other were. But the Gomes campaign, the linchpin of their complaint, challenging Mayor Joe Gannon's primary run in September 2023 was, there's no way to figure out who won because there's so many ballots being dropped into these boxes. The judge agreed, and it took three more elections to establish the mayor as the winner of that mayoral cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff in here. I got to tell you something. They're all lawyered up. These criminal defense attorneys aren't cheap. Going through all the affidavits takes hours.
Oh.
And they have mountain ranges of witnesses, a lot of them senior citizens, a lot of the seniors just saying, people take my ballots, people threaten how we should vote.
Jeez.
There's a lot of that stuff. But the other stuff that we've been talking about is finally bubbled up into charges. And I dare say there's probably going to be more people charged because there's some people who were in the limelight during that period who haven't been charged.
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be a few more out of this.
Various thoughts here and there, sharing them every Thursday afternoon, this time from Lenny Grimaldi, or with Lenny from onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, interesting headline you have here. The state education commissioner says we are a partner in change on behalf of city schools. What exactly, decode that for us, Lenny. What does that mean? In relation to Bridgeport, what's the latest you hear there?
Well, this is a commentary that was dropped today. So this is very fresh that I just loaded on my site only in Bridgeport. But this is, you have the state education commissioner, Charlene Russell Tucker, explaining why we're here. How did we get into this mess where the state education officials have decided to come in and bring some reforms and get the local school system on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
So she brought her team in, who are really rolling up their sleeves, getting involved. She writes in this commentary, how did we get there, explaining the deficits, the financial trouble that the school system has been in for years, and what actions are going to take. So what they're going to be taking over the next, several months. So she's established a technical assistance team. So these are made up of some of whom were themselves superintendent of schools around the state. They have decades of experience. And they're going to be doing things like, according to her, addressing the stability of operation, improving student performance, particularly in the special education area, which is basically like one quarter of the budget, right?
Wow.
They announced the other day that they're going to add $40 million to special education, which the governor's not too crazy about, but that's in the works in the legislature. And really working on the financial management and structural initiatives. And you and I have laughed at this. training to the Board of Education.
How to get along with each other.
Yes. Boys and girls, can we get along? Because the school board, I mean, there's been a revolving door of not superintendents over the last decade, but also school board members. They come, they're elected. There's nine of them, minority party representation, so you have others involved, but they, you know, it's like the Monday night fight, you know? I mean, you know, scream, name calling, you know, go to social media and pile on. But I think they want to try to come in and lower the temperature a little bit.
Yeah.
So they're going to have like a half a dozen training sessions.
So, so Lenny, is this like, is this a soft takeover? You know what I mean? It's not a takeover, but it's kind of the closest thing before they say they're taking over. Everybody sit down and shut up or not?
Yeah, I call it a de facto a takeover, right? So they're really coming in. So, but I haven't seen the state do this in my time in Bridgeport. Yes, and there was a takeover of schools in of 2010 under the Bill Finch administration that was overturned by the Supreme Court, right? But one of the reasons it was overturned because they didn't do any training. That was probably that's required to do some training before the state comes in. But they're really adding a lot of, you know, state firepower to this on the management side. So they're very invested. You know, the training, they're talking about just working on a board superintendent relationship, you know, ensuring the clear roles and responsibilities of the superintendent and the school board.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, if everyone plays nice in the sandbox or there's going to be some pushback with this training stuff. But I think the state right now is really invested. Are they going to invest financially much more? That's too soon to know because that's a work in progress with the state legislature right now.
So does this – so Lenny, did this – I mean, it has to, I guess. Is this Governor Lamont putting his foot down and saying, get your you-know-what together, I'm not standing for this? I'm guessing he had to give the go-order on this, right?
Absolutely. One day the governor just called and said, what the hell is going on down
Exactly.
What the hell is going on down
there?
All this stuff in Bridgeport. It's state's largest city. It does affect the state. And then, you know, the stronger the school system is, the stronger the state's going to do. So, yeah, this is the governor getting involved saying, listen, I'm going to take some ownership of this. And his state education commissioner, Farrelly Russell Tucker, she's very, very invested herself.
Yeah.
I mean, just not reading the stuff, talking to people in the system. So they want to. They want to take some time with this thing and see if they could get this ship squared away.
Is Dr. Avery, the acting commissioner, is he going to get the job full time? Are they going to go through all this search stuff again or not?
Yeah, they'll go through a search, but the state's going to have a say in it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Oh, yeah, the state's going to have to sign that. That's part of what it's not technically a takeover. But this, let's call it an intervention, right?
Okay.
Whatever. You know, we're a partner in charge of change, right? How's that?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to have to sign off on that. So all the reports back from Royce Avery is that he's the goods. People like him. He gets along with people.
Good.
He's a very strong contrast. The last person who was there, who was shown the door a couple of months ago, my guess is that he's probably going to be, you know, the leading horse in this race for the next school chief. People seem to like him, and I think, you know, he's right in the middle of this thing.
Oh my God!
I mean, he's got one of the toughest jobs in the state, Royce Avery, superintendent of Bridgeport Schools.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Delaney. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish up. I'm sorry.
No, but I think you know, having the state support. The assimilation process, him getting involved and getting the job, is going to be just on a personal level a boost. So I dare say he's probably liking this.
Yeah, and hopefully he's got a lot of Brioski. That's old school, huh? My father used to sell it. You never thought you'd hear Brioski for the. And let's segue to something at least upbeat. We have assistant police chief appointments, Lenny. Correct? You have a piece on that.
Yeah, that was popped today. So Mayor Ganim and Chief Porter announced two new appointments for Assistant Chief of Police.
Yeah.
So Paul Gresh, he was a captain. He if Chief Porter's the face of the police department, Paul Gresh is a close second.
Okay.
So, very, very community-minded. He was, for years, he headed up the security system for the Bridgeport Public Schools. Mm. He was the guy in charge of that. So he's very familiar with that. But he's very active in the community. He was also involved in planning the and funding the establishment of the city's fusion center, right, which is an important intelligence operation for the police department. So he's been in the Bridgeport PD for about 25 years or so. The other person appointed, I don't know, Frank Capozzi. So Capozzi worked in the Waterbury Police Department for a long time.
Yep.
But then he had a key job with the state. He was a police inspector for the Division of Criminal Justice.
Mm.
And that's a really important position to have, especially when it comes to controversies and involving the use of deadly force. So he had overseen a lot of high-profile cases, including the assassination of two Bristol police officers.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of experience in that area. So, yeah, two announcements that there popped this afternoon. So we got some breaking news here going on.
All right. And you can
you can't call it a boring week.
No,
right?
No. Absolutely not. Read all about it only in Bridgeport.com. The man, Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, take care. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll chat next week, my friend. Okay.
And you take care of your gomad.
Gomad. All right, Lenny, take it easy. So there you go. How about that? Over the past couple of days, Connecticut U.S. Senator Chris Murphy has been bemoaning the fact that there may be some sort of an agreement between the U.S. and Russia and Ukraine to end the war. That was top shelf front of issue today at the White House. Joining us right now, CBS News reporter Linda Kenyon. Good enough to give her a little of our time this afternoon to talk about this. Linda, great to have you back. Big doings today at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. What's going on?
Yeah, the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer and President Trump just wrapped up a short time ago a joint news conference. Chief among the topics were trade and, of course, the war in Ukraine. Now, the discussions between the British Prime Minister and the President of the United States comes just one day ahead of a visit here at the White House with Ukrainian President Zelensky. And during that visit, the president of the United States says that Zelensky is going to be signing a peace deal, one that will include a deal that will allow the United States to drill for rare earth minerals, mm-hmm. I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that will be good for both Ukraine and for the United States.
So finally, Linda, they haven't given you folks any bullet points yet, have they, as to what exactly is in this deal? Or are you expecting to get some of that maybe in the next couple of days here? Or is this thing still shrouded in mystery?
Well, we've gotten sort of the broad contours of the deal, which would include a European peacekeeping force. Mm. The president has not committed to any security guarantees provided by the United States. His main focus right now has been getting back what he says is the U.S. investment for the war against Russia after the Russian invasion. Interestingly enough, during the question and answer session during the news conference, a member of the British press asked the President of the United States if he would issue an apology while Zelensky is here for calling Zelensky a dictator. And the president did not directly respond to that question.
Interesting. Linda, thank you. Linda Kenyon, CBS News in D.C. covering all this. Linda, be good. Take care, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you so much.
That sounds good.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Linda. There you go.